Hello, guys. You
Hello.
You like tigers? We got tigers. We got all the tigers you need in Tiger King.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Dot the Doc. I'm Ian, your host, and I'm joined by Matt again. Hello.
Hello, listeners.
Today we're going to be talking about episode 2 of Tiger King. It's a crazy one. Let's begin first, before we go into it. There's some corrections for the last episode. In the last episode, we discussed like if you could just release a tiger or a lion or something like that back into the wild. And according to BigCatRescue.org, like Carol's website, there's like an FAQ, and it basically answers this question for us. And the answer is no, you can't, unless it was born in that country.
Which I guess kind of does make sense, like, the more you kind of think about it, like...
Yeah, and also it says that tiger cubs should be with their mum up until, like, week 4, but, like, a lot of Joe's ones and a lot of, you know, the rest of them and stuff, they snatch them straight from the mum. It's like literally like 8 days old or something, and they're like, you know, out being petted.
I think there's a point in this episode even, I don't think there's a point we'll go into loads, but where Joe brings like a set of cubs out to a bunch of people and is like, yeah, they were born an hour ago. So that kind of shows you the difference. But kind of between Carol and Joe in terms of their thoughts on tiger cubs.
Yeah, it's a bit sketchy. But yeah, that's one of the main things we need to talk about. Let's go into the episode. So the episode opens with someone having their arm ripped off. What?
It's a pretty insane opening. Like, to go from episode one where you're kind of like awestruck by everything in it as it is, and then the opening to this episode is just, yeah, you're literally like, okay, like shit's getting real now.
Yeah, so we've seen Saf in the first episode. They were just like being interviewed the whole the thing is, I didn't realize until I had to flick back through the first episode, I noticed that Saf was missing the arm in the first episode, which, like,
it's crazy how, like, I was the same, like, did not realize or notice at first.
No, I didn't. And I even thought that they were showing Saf from, like, you know, like, in a way that you wouldn't be able to notice. But nope, it's kind of exactly the same as the first episode. But I didn't even pay attention to that.
I guess that's kind of a good thing, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Saf was, like, just laying there on the ground. Joe's ringing an ambulance. And he's like looking stressed. He's like going around talking to all the staff, and he's
ripped Sam's arm clean off. Arm clean off.
I thought they it was just, was it the skin or that?
Well, I don't know, because I'm sure at that beginning bit they like it, maybe even on the police call. Let's say maybe that's just panic. Perhaps that's just panic from yeah. Which you can totally understand under the circumstances.
Yeah, because Joe walks into the gift shop and tells people the news. It's crazy because it cuts to Joe being, you know, all serious, like, oh, just before you hear on the news, guys. I'm not going to do the voice.
Go on, Ian.
He's like, before you hear on the news, one of my trainers had their arm ripped clear off.
Basically asking them if they'd like a rain check on their day.
or a refund. But it cuts the people in the gift shop, and they all just look like kind of like, whoa, what's going on here? They're kind of like deer in like headlights.
Yeah.
Because they're just being filmed and stuff. They're probably like, what, how to react? They look kind of, like, if anything, like, no reaction. They're just kind of like, I'm just here to buy my Tiger King pants.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose it could be shock. Like, if you know, if you were in that, if you were at a zoo, and the owner, you're in the gift shop at a zoo, and the owner comes in and comes out with that. Like, how do you react to that? How do you react to that?
Would you? I mean, because if you was in the gift shop, you should be at the end of the day. It should be at the end of the tour. Would you? Well, you'd get a refund, or would you get a rain check? What would you do?
I really don't know. I mean, I guess a rain check. Like, if I was really into that zoo, then hey, free day out.
I would have got a refund, and then I would spend it on some Tiger King underwear.
not the sex gel then.
Not the sex gel. I don't know, because you know I can be standing there. Just, what do I want? Leopard print? Do I want? Do I want tiger print?
I guarantee they're all modelled by Joe as well.
Oh no! it's ridiculous. But then then he turns to the camera and he says, "I'm never gonna financially recover from this."
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, does he mean that it's going to be bad press overall? Is it going to be like him trying to have him to pay out to Saf because of the injury at work?
I think it's the bad press. I think I could be completely wrong, but I think that is kind of at the forefront of Joe's mind. Because it already comes across that he and his group are kind of looked down upon. Mm. So all it takes is, you know, something like this to really, really create some media buzz and not the kind of press and exposure that you would want in owning a place like that.
Yeah, it's, I don't know, but any press is somewhat good press, because his zoo is shown on TV like nationwide, and then again I obviously people are like, oh, I don't like a tiger to attack me, but then
yeah, I mean, are you gonna want to go to a zoo that would you be willing to go to a zoo tomorrow that you saw a massive news story about today that a tiger had just ripped someone's arm off? Like, it's not exactly,
yeah, I would
maybe you would.
Again, is it?
Well, how, like, do you know that?
Because
how do you know? Like, sure. Would you want to take your children there?
And it was a
if member, you had children,
a member of staff, but
you've got to understand as well with the media, like the media can paint things in a certain light. Like, sometimes a headline in itself, like they might leave out that it's a member of staff. All they have to put is person gets their arm ripped off by tiger in Joe Exotic's zoo. Yeah. You know, that's you know how the media can work at times.
Yeah, they're you know, petitioning to close the zoo down and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, you can see it being a big problem, definitely.
But we jump forward to after, I guess, the intro. And Saf's there talking about Saf was like laying in the hospital, and they basically kind of come over and was it John Rinky? I think it's John Rinky. He come over and he like offers Saf a pen, and they write their name and all that. And
but... yeah, basically to see, you know, like if Saf can still use, I guess, the muscles, nerves, and whatnot in the hand, like that's what I would guess is the point of that. But they talk how the doctor says it will take, is it 2 years of reconstructive surgery,
yeah, to fix
the hand. So it's, I guess, semi, if anything, kind of as a normal hand would work and function.
I mean, I guess it functions already, but it's just, maybe it looks, there's no skin, so it'd be maybe grafts from the leg, or I'm not too sure. Maybe it's, I don't know if skin was the problem, or if it was like just disfigured, or
mm-hmm. I mean, I would think, though, 2 years of reconstructive surgery, that means more than just skin. I would think there's nerve damage there.
Oh, yeah, like, maybe. Or the doctor said, we can amputate it. And Seth was like, cut it off.
That's it, literally. Like, don't even have to think about it. Take it away.
That was so badass.
Yes. Yeah. Like, Saf is incredible. Like, just... like, I'm blown away by how Saf, like, just has this kind of extremely positive outlook. Like, it's quite inspiring.
Yeah, and the whole gist of it is because Saf didn't want to give the zoo a bad name. They didn't want to, like, have a reason to have the animals put down because of that. And, like, Saf returned to work in just 5 days after the attack. Oh, no, 5 days after coming out of hospital, not 5 days after the attack. Because Saf was in the hospital for a week, getting the arm chopped off.
I mean, that's incredible. Like, could you imagine that? Like for something that like that to happen, like, you can imagine how traumatic that would be in itself.
It's and a life-changing event, isn't it?
Completely. Like, to lose your hand and then to want to step back into that arena of these animals that could quite easily do that again. Like, that takes a hell of a lot of guts, and it kind of speaks to Saf's character and passion for the job.
Yeah, it was pretty incredible. I was surprised by that.
I will say, on my first watch, I did wonder, because obviously you're trying to work out whether, like, Joe has, like, it appears that Joe's staff, like, a lot of them, like, this, the job is kind of a lifeline for them. And when I first heard that Saf had gone back so soon and didn't want to create this bad press on the place, I wondered at first if maybe Joe had tried to push that on them. Like, obviously it doesn't state that at all, but it was a thought that went through my mind. But then the more I see of Saf, I think Saf is a kind of free thinker. So maybe not that Joe had kind of forced that, but it did cross my mind. That's what I'm saying. It did cross my mind.
Yeah, and I don't know. I thought maybe it could be possibly because of the American healthcare system, because just getting that ambulance to the hospital, that would have cost a couple of grand. Then
does it state whether Saf or any of Joe's employees are insured? I don't think it states that at all, does it? So, especially if Saf isn't insured, you know, the money that would cost, even, I guess, for the amputation, like, extortionate.
Yeah, I can't imagine how much that cost. So no wonder Saf was back at work, like, within 5 days after that. Not just because Saf's a complete trooper when it comes to it, but it's just, I don't know. Healthcare is one thing I'm glad in this country we don't have to worry about so much.
Thank God for the NHS.
Yeah. Well, we'll clap later on.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was the crazy opening in the episode. But then it moves on to John. Thing is it John Rinky or is it John Ricky?
I'm not sure on the pronunciation. As soon as I saw the name and wrote it down in my notes, I was like, I'm going to struggle with that surname. So obviously, if we are butchering it, apologies.
I think it's Rinky, John Rinky. Because, side note, I've been told by a few of my friends to watch the Louis Theroux America's Most Dangerous Animals documentary. And it features Joe Exotic, and it's like him from like 2011. So I think it's like way before this documentary.
I need to watch that. I'd be really, really interested in watching
it's,
that.
It's about four or five years before this documentary, the earliest footage in this documentary. And Joe looks, obviously younger, like thinner. And he's not walking around with a cast in his leg anymore. He hasn't got the crutch anymore. Mm-hmm. And obviously Louis Theroux is just the best. Absolutely best.
Louis is incredible.
He's probably the reason why I'm so into documentaries overall. I used to watch Weird Weekends as a kid, constantly.
So I've got the box set and everything.
Oh, it's the best. Well, we definitely have to do some Louis Theroux at some point. But this is the thing. So in that documentary, I mean, I'm not going to go into it too much, but it has John Rinky in that documentary, and he introduced himself, and I put the subtitles on the thing, and it says John Rinky. And I think he even had his caption name as John Rinky. So it's confusing as hell, because I thought, oh, I'll finally work out how to pronounce his name. And no, it's. But what's interesting is in this documentary, it mentions that he lost his legs in a zip line accident.
Yep.
Fell 50 feet and landed on his feet and just. Basically lost them from kind of just overuse of them after that, because they were he was semi-paralyzed, wasn't he, from the shin down, I think?
Yeah, it sounds painful as hell. Well, it sounds awful.
I don't think he could feel the legs, so he's just kind of just walking on, if you were sat down cross-legged and you try to get up and you just walk on them and you're kind of walking on your ankles. That's what, as far as I can tell, it feel like. I mean, I'm just imagining that could be like.
No, I'm thinking the accident sounds.
Oh yeah.
Like, just ouch. doesn't even bear to think about. Send shivers up my spine.
Oh yeah, that would have been some. Obviously, it did do some serious damage. You can see that, but
So hang on. Does it state different then in the Louis documentary?
Yeah,
about his legs.
It says that he was testing out a friend's, was it a fairground ride?
Right.
He said that he had an accident on a fair, testing out a fairground ride, and he was the last to go, and it just misfunctioned.
How strange.
Malfunctioned, sorry.
I was thinking you were going to say he got mauled by a tiger and just got absolutely brutally, I thought you was going to say that, And maybe they just changed it for this documentary for some reason.
It still fits in because it's a zip line. I can imagine a zip line being at a fair or fairground thing. But yeah, I love that he's got spray painted legs and stuff, and they're
custom. Yeah, they look incredible.
Yeah, they look awesome, and I love how people there. Probably thinks, yeah, he definitely lost his legs through
that. That's what I mean. If you went to a zoo and you saw a handler of these animals and both their legs were missing, your mind would just run away with itself.
Well, yeah, you see him just kind of sorting out the cages and stuff, and then you turn around and you see Saf missing an arm. you're gonna think, is this place safe?
Yes.
I don't know.
More power to them, though. More power to them. Yeah,
exactly. I mean, they're passionate about what they do. And so then we move on to Doc Antle.
He's back again.
He's back again. He's riding that elephant again.
He looks so happy on there.
I mean, I don't blame him. I think that'd be kind of cool. You kind of
it would be incredible. Whether it's right to do or not, I don't know. Well, of course, it's probably not right. It's kind of not natural to ride
I'm not elephants. Even sure. Would I don't know, like, because a massive elephant would even like kind of feel that heavy having someone on the back of you. I mean,
oh yeah, I'm sure. No, they're powerful, strong animals. Like, it probably does nothing, but still, it's kind of improved. Like, you're gonna ask the elephant.
Might have to. They have to ask my mate Doolittle, find out what's going on. Yeah, so he's riding along on the elephant and he's going into the water and it's
happy as Larry. Yeah, he's absolutely beaming.
But I noticed on like the second watch there's like a little dog that's on top of the elephant.
Oh really?
Yeah, on in the water, it's like him, like, you know, wetting down the, I don't know, washing the elephant, and then like there's like a little dog with like a ball or something in his mouth, just like on the elephant's like back.
Okay, this is sounding more and more like a crazy circus show.
I was like, oh, secret dog. It's a secret dog. Secret doggo. Anyway, so we get to see more of his being a director. To the director again.
Yeah, so would you like me on the couch or like the doctor?
Do you want to see him walk around? Do you want to
it's
gotta
be
again?
Like Doc, what? Man, like Doc, please, like let me do my job.
It's I don't know, it's just everything he says is kind of just
He's a character. As much as Joe, like, I mean, Joe jumps off the page, like he is completely in your face out there. And Doc is similar, just I think I said before, just in a slightly more subtle way.
I just feel like he's always defending himself. He always sounds like he's defending himself, like, constantly. So one of his quotes in this bit is like, nothing is cooler, sexier, or more significant in the world we live in today than a tiger. And he goes on to say, everybody loves them, and anybody who says they don't is insecure and broken. what do you think about that? Would you say you love tigers, Matt? Or
I mean, I have no direct affinity to the tiger myself. Like, I love all animals. I think animals are amazing. I'm glad we share the earth with them. But yeah, I don't have a list and like, yeah, well, tigers, you know, if I didn't like them, I'd be a broken man.
Yeah.
I imagine for Dokkan or Bhagavan, I imagine he has had, like many of these big cat owners, he's had to defend himself a lot. From the likes of animal rights groups and you know, like the Carole Baskins of the world, so I imagine it becomes this kind of natural defense system for him, where he sees anyone who doesn't like what he does as the bad guy.
Yeah,
similar again to Joe,
because later we're going to go into it. Later in the episode, but he does defend himself, and he just feels like he's always on. I don't know how long this was shot over, like what period of time. I imagine for him he was quite busy, and he put like all of his stuff in this whole documentary is probably only shot in like a weekend. I bet that's what it is.
More than likely. Like he seems one of them characters that is like, okay, I've got a 4-hour slot on Saturday where I can fit you in, you know, and perhaps that's why he's so directorial, because it's like, okay, we need to get this done. I'm a busy man. Okay, so we move to Carole next, and she's explaining that Joe actually breeds a lot of his cubs in order to sell them on to other parks, zoos. Quite a lot. How many was it? Was it 28?
Yeah, 28 places.
28 places. And these include Bhagavan, because as we know, Bhagavan also does cub petting. He believes in that. well, in order to make money. And other places, you get introduced to a guy called Tim Stark, also who is being sold these cubs.
He just seems like a crazy guy on his porch. That's what he feels like.
Yeah, it's I mean, we don't really get to see a lot of Tim Stark there, but yeah, but it just goes to show that, like, well, I guess Bagavan, Doc Antle, who, you know, we've seen a lot of already, that he does have a connection to Joe. They have a connection through the selling of cubs, which obviously makes Joe and his place quite a lot of money, which is probably a big part of the income.
Yeah, and it said that John, like Joe's husband, drove the animals across the country. So he would like deliver them to like these different places, like as you said, like 28 different places. One thing I need to note though is if you want to see more of Tim Stark, watch the Louis Theroux documentary, because
he's in it.
Yeah, he features it as like one of the main people he Louis goes to.
You know, I'm sure I have seen the documentary in the past of the exotic animals Louis Theroux, but it's obviously so long ago that it's, and obviously I didn't know these characters at the time, so it's going to be so interesting to watch that.
Yeah, because Joe is absolutely nothing like how he is in this documentary. Like he's very together in that sense. Like he's kind of very like sensible, and he seems like kind of just more about, he's wearing like uniform for the park. Like he looks like a ranger or something.
Wow.
And it's completely different. It's like night and day different.
Something obviously changed in Joe's life since then.
Yeah, maybe. Or just because it's a different kind of documentary. I mean, like if the BBC said they were going to like do a documentary on you, you'd be like, oh, better whip out the ranger uniform.
I guess. Yeah.
Yeah, because they're like a respectable, I mean.
But I wonder if like Joe at that time possibly wasn't doing his internet TV show. And perhaps once that began was when, you know, the kind of addiction to the fame aspect of it came about. And maybe that's when his clothing became more eccentric and, you know, possibly that garnered more viewers because they were like, oh, look at this crazy guy.
Yeah, it seems completely different. Like a lot of things are different. Maybe we'll do like some kind of recap at the end of after all these episodes and stuff, and maybe just do like a bonus episode on this one, like just kind of like comparison, almost a comparison.
Definitely.
Piece, because I see that Louis Theroux tweeted on Twitter recently saying he's just watched the Tiger King documentary himself, and he wants to do like he's going to reveal his thoughts in the next couple of days.
Yeah.
So we'll maybe wait for that to happen and then incorporate into maybe the next podcast. Maybe
definitely.
Or just at the end, though, as a recap. Yeah, so they mentioned about the Endangered Species Act, and it says basically it forbids anybody from selling a tiger. You can't buy, sell, trade, or barter anything endangered. But then it says that zoos without cubs will still buy them because, you know, you'd be crazy not to.
Yeah, and they're talking about just everyday zoos as well. They're not just talking about, I don't think anyway, that they're just talking about these, you know, like the likes of Joe and Bagavan.
And Tim.
And Tim. But perhaps even, you know, I guess, like London Zoo. I'm not putting it out there that they do that by any means. But
I can't imagine them buying it from there. Surely they have like someone who's already, you know, they must have some kind of way of doing it other than like some guy out of the back of his boot.
Yeah, but they said on there the zoos purchase the cubs if the tigers aren't breeding.
Okay.
So I don't know if that's a case of, you know, in their surroundings, perhaps, you know, like with pandas.
Yeah.
You know, like there's a real struggle with birthing new pandas in enclosures. Like it's kind of a big thing, isn't it? So
it just doesn't really happen, does it? So one thing that Joe says in this segment, though, is they were like, oh, how much will a baby tiger set you back? And he's like, $2,000. Mm-hmm. I'm like, what? That's crazy. Like
it's kind of like when you think about it, really, it's not a lot of money, really, in the grand scheme of things.
No, it's not. Like and there must be like so many people who go to the zoo to see, you know, Mama Tiger has just had some, like, cubs, and they're like, I really fancy a little baby tiger. I don't know. And then I don't know. I feel like we're going too much into what we've talked about in the first one. So we'll move on from this now, I think, and we'll go on to Mario.
It's a me.
Yeah, it's a him. Yeah, I wouldn't. Sorry. Yeah, like, definitely wouldn't say it to his face. I think he would murder us.
Oh, no way. Not a chance. I would be like, yes, sir. Thank you, sir.
So we move on to, yeah, Mario Tebro. Is it Tebro? Yeah, that's how you pronounce it, because I've written it how, like, it's meant to be pronounced.
Phonetically, right?
Yeah, exactly. Well, but, like, in my own weird way. Yeah,
Basically,
so he.
the Tony Montana of the animal world, as it comes across.
Just crazy. He got sentenced to 100 years in jail and then got off. Like,
Serve, what was it, 12? 12 years?
yeah, 12 years. He,
That's a pretty steep, like, a downward, like, climb. 100 years down to 12, like. That gets you thinking if maybe money played a part in that.
I don't know. I mean,
Like, he's
I've that.
obviously a very, very rich man, as you find out his past revolves around the drug trade.
Yeah.
And basically, like, when I say the Tony Montana of the animal world, he was, a lot of people think he was the inspiration for the movie Scarface, the Al Pacino version. Obviously, there was an original Scarface movies, I think
Yeah.
perhaps in the 60s, maybe something like that. I could be wrong. But yeah, I can see it. I can totally see it. Like, I love the film Scarface. I'm a big, big fan of that film. And I can see it.
I can see it, obviously, him older and stuff, but, like, in the earlier days, I thought he looked like was it like Charles Manson or something, called
A little bit, I
kind of
suppose.
a little bit like Trevor from, like, GTA a
But
bit, like.
I don't think so much it's in terms of look. I think it's in what he done, in terms of
Yeah.
the drug business he was involved in.
It's just insane. So he says that he was, like, never really allowed to have pets when he was younger and stuff. So, because his mum was really against pets. And then when he gets out of the house, the first thing he does is get, like, three giant Great Danes.
Yeah.
And
Almost like
yeah,
I'm
then
free to do what I want now.
yeah, but then he goes on to buy, like, loads of other animals. And yeah, and he has, like, a massive private collection, which even it kind of warrants him opening the zoo
Yeah.
overall,
I mean,
like a pri
have you seen the film Scarface?
yeah, not for years,
Oh, right. Well,
obviously.
you know
Years.
in that Tony Montana owns a tiger, right?
I haven't seen it for
Oh,
years.
right.
It kind
Well,
of makes
but
oh.
yeah, it kind of adds up again. Like, he has a tiger on in his mansion, or on the grounds of his mansion, in the gardens. And again, it's that kind of this kind of massive drug kingpin. And I guess again, it's a statement. It's a statement, and it's a protective aspect of his, what would you call it? His estate, his, I can't think of the word. The word's not coming to me.
Okay.
But yeah, like, it's another piece that just goes hand in hand with the description of him being the Tony Montana of the animal world.
I need to watch it again. I haven't, obviously, I said I haven't seen it. It must have been like 10 years since I
It's
watched
a
it.
great film. Great film. I mean, Al
But
Pacino, like, fantastic actor.
I'll give it a watch again, maybe this weekend. But if I can fit it in amongst all these episodes that we have to do.
Yeah.
One of his keepers says that they used to stuff, like, drugs, like cocaine, into snakes. And, like, there's a newspaper clipping that comes up where it said 223 snakes found stuffed with drugs, which is insane. Just
Absolutely insane.
It's and you see like one, and you see a snake, don't you? Like a snake that's been cut open.
And insane, and kind of a, like, that's like really horrible. Like,
yeah, it's horrific.
Like, you know, basically, it comes across that he's like, for, at the start, you get the impression, and I don't think it's not true that he has an absolute affinity for these animals, these exotic pets, so to speak. But then you kind of get the impression that he's used them in a different way to kind of push forward this drug cartel of sorts.
He did say that he sold drugs to maintain his animal habit,
mm-hmm.
which is a great line there. But then it goes into the reason why he got 100 years in jail was because someone who worked for him shot it was basically like an informant, like a drug informant. And mm-hmm. and then they dumped the body of the informant on his farm. And then one of his crazy partners says, hey, we should just cut him up and burn him.
Yeah. again, like, they kind of, in the documentary, they kind of mirror in the, to the Scarface movie, of a point where Tony Montana takes I think it's like a jigsaw.
Circular saw?
Yeah, yeah, to a guy, like, chained up to, in a bathtub, to the rail of the curtain for the shower. So I think they kind of mirror it to that. So again, another kind of aspect of perhaps where they got this idea in the movie.
Yeah. To be honest, I did wonder why he said, like, I did not take a circular saw to his neck and stuff like that. So maybe he was quoting, so I completely missed all these references because I haven't seen Scarface in like a decade, and I don't know. Oh yeah, spoiler alert, by the way.
I mean, if you haven't seen Scarface, like, it's an incredible film.
Yeah. Then after that, we meet his wife Maria, who she's obsessed with primates. Has like little like chimps that she dresses up in baby clothing.
Doesn't she say at one point that she may actually love them more than her own children?
Yeah, 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 she does. And they said that they have like between 7 to 8 like, you know, primates in their house anytime. So like, and that's like in their bedroom.
Mm-hmm.
And we also find out from around Maria, because they have like a book of like Doc Antle, and we see like, you know, shots of his like animals and stuff, and we find out that he's a doctor, and they was like, oh, like an actual doctor of mystical science. That's what he's a doctor of.
How do I get that degree?
I think you just print it out.
Yeah,
you?
Exactly. I'll get that free off the internet, can't I?
Like, I think. Yeah, he's a doctor of mystical science. So, like, when we talk about, oh, he's a doctor in the first episode, it was like, yeah, I'm pretty sure he said that he was a doctor, you know, and I thought he might be like a veterinarian or something like that, but nope, mystical science.
Kind of makes sense when you really think about it, when you look at his character.
But, you know, like, that degree, like, that doctorate has gone somewhere. It's got him, like, super rich overall. And we also find out that he's got 3 wives, or 3 to 4 wives. And it's insane. And then it goes on. Then we go into Doc Antle again. And he talks about his apprentices. And I don't know, I guess it's kind of, they start off as apprentice and they end up as his wife, I guess.
Yeah, like, it's kind of, again, like, quite sketchy. Like, he brings them in as teenagers. And It's, I mean, again, I don't want to, you know, I'm not stating this as fact, because I'm just going off of my perception from the documentary, but it almost feels kind of like a grooming act, which kind of feels quite wrong.
Yeah, because when they come in, like Barbara, who we'll talk about in a minute or two, she was 17 when she come into it. I think it was 17. Uh-huh. And yeah, realize that, like, I don't think there's any male apprentices. There's only just female apprentices. Oh,
of course. Bhagavan's the male in that situation.
Yeah.
He is king. In his mind, he is king. And I think they call it his harem, don't they?
Yeah. What was... I can't remember the actual name for it. I've got it written down. Oh, yeah, is it... Shaktipa. He's like a guru. So he'd be a guru, and that's like a way of like enlightening them and stuff like that. And we're jumping ahead of ourselves too much, but we go back to that in a minute. His wives, China, Moksha, and Rajni. That's not their real names whatsoever. They for some reason they call themselves something else like that.
It's like Bhagavan, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I'm not even sure what his real name is. I think on IMDb it says like in school they used to call him Kevin as a way of pronouncing his name, but I can't remember what his real name was. I think it was like really hard to pronounce. But yeah, so he's been interviewed at this time, like by the director, and every time the director's trying to push us, like find out some more about him. He like basically yells and says, "You can't get into my complex lifestyle. It's not for prime time."
yeah, he again. It comes across very much of a control freak. Like
he's so on the edge. He doesn't because he knows this is gonna like.
He doesn't. He doesn't want to be outed. It's like he's a very very smart man. A very smart man. Like he wants to be in control of the narrative. But as we see within this documentary, he possibly, whilst filming it, he possibly thinks that, okay, this is going to be my narrative that's pushed forward here. But obviously, the documentary kind of shows you a little more than perhaps he'd be happy with the viewers seeing.
I mean, it's hard not to, because he does refer to my partner... wife, my partner, this and that, and like my girlfriend and all that kind of stuff. He refers to them like he's like, oh, there's that house. I guess that's all his like land. That must be like just this massive complex, like with all these houses built on them.
Yeah.
It wasn't just like a regular street or anything, was it? He was driving around in the golf cart, wasn't he? But oh, one thing I did notice, right? His name of his place is called Tigers.
All right.
And it was, you see tigers with like, you know, dots between it and stuff. You think, oh, what's tiger stand for? And I had to pause it to find out what it said. But tigers stands for the Institute of Greatly Endangered and Rare Species.
So, good find.
Yeah, I had to pause it because it's like on the website bit where it's like Barbara's like looking at, you know, to go to this place, tigers.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, that's interesting. It's like obviously he's blatantly just kind of taken the word tigers and just try to make it sound like it's a, you know, mean something.
Yeah,
I mean it does.
It just fits his character completely. Trying to make more of something than what it is. Trying to trying to just amp it up into something that it's possibly not, like a kind of smokescreen, you know.
So yeah, after that we move on to Barbara. Mm-hmm. And she was a apprentice there from 1999 to 2008, and I don't know, she's basically just everything that Doc's saying. He says something, he says like it's a magical place where everything is neutral and happy and going well. And then it kind of cuts to her saying, yeah, we basically lived in horse stalls full of cockroaches. And she said that like, oh, she like he said to her that, you know, sleep with me and like you'll get to the top. And it seems like, you know, I don't know if all the people in the document, all the his wives currently did that, because
I mean, I think it kind of speaks for itself. I don't think it takes much to read between the lines there, really.
Yeah, she says that because it has like shots of him in the back of like a limousine or something like that, and it has like what, about 8 or 9 girls just sitting on him more or less, all around him, and I guess that might have been his staff at the time. Maybe that could have been like a Christmas do. I don't know. and yeah, like, so Barbara says that they're like, oh yeah, you need to have his like shock tipper with his penis, which is like because he was making out he was a guru, and they were like, oh, a way of being enlightened was like, you know, sleeping with him, and so it kind of like elevates you beyond, you know, whatnot and stuff.
It kind of speaks again to that kind of cult mentality of some of these groups. Again, like the name of this episode is Cult of Personality, so when I first saw that that title for the episode, like I was like, oh well, that kind of just refers to Joe, because like I, you know, if you think of his group as like this cult, and they are all like everyone in Joe's group like has this kind of out there personality of like, you kind of want to know more about all of them. They're all very, very interesting characters. But again, like I think it kind of spreads over to Bhagavan as well.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like it's for him. Yeah, that's what I'm surprised, because he's the only one out of both of them that we know that is properly charging money. Because like we found out how much it costs to go to his place.
Mm-hmm.
And he has these like shows and stuff put on, but he feels like he's got so much to hide. There's definitely like a lot more, I feel like, can be revealed about him.
Yeah, it feels like there's a lot of skeletons in his closet, and I don't know whether we'll find out all of them or not. Like he seems he's very much so in control again of the narrative. So maybe parts of it will seep through as the documentary goes on. But I imagine he kind of holds his cards pretty close to his chest when it comes to, you know, maybe that's more of the worst aspects of what he does.
It does reveal like a bit further on in the episode. It says he basically just says to the documentary filmmaker that you're trying to lead me down a path where you're going to say that you have to join a fucking cult to work here. Mm-hmm. And it shows you one of his wives, Moksha, and she reveals that she works from 8 a.m. to midnight each day, and they found that they get paid $100 a week.
That's just crazy, isn't it? Like that kind of, again, like Bhagavan has some power over these people, like, because I couldn't survive on that, could you?
No, not at all. I mean, like, unless crazy. It was kind of like, is it, if it's like room and board, maybe. I mean, if you just put it aside, like,
yeah,
you
know, I imagine it probably is in that kind of setup. So I can understand that. But again, that's like, for it sounds like they were worked to the bone.
I mean,
not in the greatest, what's the word? It wasn't a perhaps a cleanly, safe atmosphere for them to be in. So again, it's this kind of like the thing I get most from Doc is control. Like there's a lot of control going on there.
Yeah, because Barbara says that he liked to control how they looked, and he would choose the outfits they wear, and they're kind of wearing like kind of kind of skimpy outfits. And also he makes like Barbara get like implants.
Mm-hmm. Like a boob job.
Yeah, yeah, like it's just crazy that
Doesn't she say like as well that like she doesn't even remember agreeing to it? Like it was kind of it comes across again that it was maybe forced upon her.
Yeah, because they're working like what 15 hours like days and stuff, and like she's just anything for like a couple of days off just to chill out and stuff. Like yeah. It must be just tough. I mean, the fact that Doc is only paying them $100 a week, but then later in the episode you find out Joe pays them $150 a week. I mean, it's only $50 more, like overall. But I mean,
but you get the feeling that with Joe's group, like that kind of money to some of these people is possibly quite a large sum of money, because of where they've come from. And again, with Joe's group, like the more I've kind of like watched this, in terms of like, you know, making notes and things, it kind of comes to the forefront that Joe's group, like they feel like they've been saved from a life of peril. Whereas that doesn't seem to be the case with Bhagavan's group.
Yeah, his group does come across like happy to work there. They enjoy it. It seemed like they mostly enjoy working there.
Yeah.
Like Joe's group, I mean, sorry. I guess you don't really kind of get that much on Bhagavan's group. Like, it's just only the one person who ran away and, like, his, like, current, one of his current wives who was knackered. But, like, yeah. I mean, really tired overall. But then we move on to find out towards the end of this segment that we found out that Joe has two husbands. Joe ends up meeting a guy called Travis.
Yeah.
And they end up getting, I don't know, it's like a three-way
marriage.
Yeah, three-way marriage. I don't know. Did you feel like John in this one, like he kind of felt like he had just some regret overall, like by agreeing to have Travis in?
Yeah, it comes across, yeah, like he doesn't specifically say it, but like you kind of read between the lines, and it almost feels, or it comes across that he feels like he's kind of being traded in for a younger model.
Yeah, because it's weird. He does feel like he kind of looks a bit hurt overall. I mean, this is obviously years after they got married and stuff, but he kind of feels like he didn't realize at the time like what he was agreeing to.
Because I must just quickly say, because I did have this thought, and it's a silly thought, but when we were saying before about like casting a movie of this, I can see John being played by a massively trimmed down Dave Bautista.
I can see that
professional wrestler and Guardians of the Galaxy actor. Like, there's definitely a kind of similarity there. Obviously, not the teeth.
More hair and stuff.
Yeah, but, yeah, and just to like some of the facial features.
I can see that. Yeah, I can definitely see that. And we see like another music video from Joe, which is "You Were My First." Like, I don't know. I think it's "You Might Were My First Love." Yeah. And he's like singing to John.
Yeah, and do you think that is like almost like a way of Joe trying to make John feel better about the situation? Like, you were the first. You were the first, so you still matter to me.
Yeah, maybe.
Kind of how it come across to me.
I just love that he's got so many music videos that are kind of very fitting for like this story. Like, it kind of it fits in perfectly with this documentary. So the documentary filmmaker for this must have had like a hell of a time squeezing these like music videos in each time. Do you notice John's tattoos as well?
Of Joe Exotic, above his.
Above his crotch and stuff. Dick. Yeah, it says privately owns Joe Exotic underneath. But I don't know, it's weird because I guess Joe's kind of, he wants to have like a kind of a poly relationship where it's like multiple people and stuff.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, I guess John was probably just content with being just them and stuff, you know? But, and the fact that,
Like there's a scene like with I think Joe and Travis like I think they're just sat on a couch. Travis is like petting a baby white tiger cub, I think. But he's like mouth wide open and he
Oh
looks
yeah.
like he is spaced out of this world. Like he there is no doubt in my mind that man is on something.
Actually wrote I did write that down as well because I was like, yeah, that's like so it's so bizarre. His mouth is like open massive, like
Yeah,
he's
it's
like
like
laughing
he's
at the funniest
complete.
thing on the TV.
Yeah, like, but it's like he is completely off his head on something, or that's what it comes across to me.
And the fact that like Travis was like he classed himself as straight before that, and then like Joe basically said to him, "When you watch porn, do you like it when someone with a small dick or with a large dick like you know fucks a woman?" And he's like, "Oh, I like the guy with the large dicks and stuff like
It's
that."
like you're obviously not that straight, are
That's
you?
I thought that was like such a kind of great kind of like litmus test overall. Like, yep.
That did make me giggle. That did make me giggle. Like, kind of, that's just Joe, isn't it? Like, it's completely a Joe thing to say.
But yeah, I was surprised. I mean, that he has like two husbands and like everybody seems to have multiple partners in this.
I
And
mean,
then we
well, I don't know about Carol, but I guess that could come through in future episodes.
yeah well we haven't got to that bit yet. We'll go I mean we'll find out more towards the end I guess this episode. We do move into Carol next though, and we see Carol and her army of volunteers with all the colors of the rainbow for shirts and stuff. And
And like the
we
shirts, are they there? Aren't they for like a color represents how many years you've been there?
Yeah, like in different levels, because I mean, it's kind of crazy because it's like a massive system where it's like, oh, if you're there for like 6 months, you get a red shirt, and then you like if you pass this test, you get a yellow shirt. It's like kind of like karate belts in shirt form kind of thing, and
Yeah, it's
and
like a grading, isn't it? Like in martial arts, you have a grading, you pass the grading, and you get a different color belt to kind of move on up to that next level.
yeah, and she was saying that was it Master Keeper was like kind of the final thing. And I was thinking, are these actual qualifications, or is it just like, oh, I've got like a different shirt today or something? Or it's the, I mean, if they got some kind of qualification out of it, that'd be kind of cool.
Like as well, like she seems quite friendly. Like you see parts where she's walking around the park, and kind of like seeing some of these volunteers as she goes by, and she seems to have a kind of friendly, back and forth with them, which is quite nice to see. But then at another point, she says that she barely knows the names of these people, and unless they've been there up to say 5 years. Because then she's like, I've seen you for a long time. You've aged. Like, so even that, it's like,
I mean, that's understandable though, isn't it? Because like if like at on this particular moment in the documentary, they're doing an induction for loads of new people. And as far as I can tell, she had like, you know, just under I don't know, 60 or whatever volunteers show up
But at
as
the
well
same
as like an open
time,
date.
if I was a volunteer someone and I'd been there, say, 3 years and the owner still didn't know me by name, I'd be kind of a little disappointed in that. As a
I mean,
volunteer, I'm basically doing all this work for you for free in order to keep your thing afloat, and you can't even do the slightest of remembering my name. after 3 years or even 4 years. She said it takes about 5 years before she'll, you know, that could be just her, given a random number of years, of course.
But I think people are doing it for the animals, though, aren't they? They're doing it because they want to hang out with tigers and stuff all day. They want to be around these like exotic creatures.
Of course,
but
I feel like they're helping. Yeah, of course. But I'm sure that a lot of these helpers probably look up to Carol. So, you know, just my personal preference, aspect of it. I'd be a little bit disappointed if I'd been volunteering for someone for 3-4 years and they couldn't even remember my name. But hey, name badges.
Name badges. Hey, Mr. Yellow T-shirt, come over here. So she has a massive following on social media, like over 2 million people following her Facebook. She does like live shows, which are kind of the shows that you would want to watch. You'd be like, oh yeah, I want to find out more about the zoo, about the animals, and about, like, you know, the care of them. Like, yeah. Instead of Joe's like rampage against, you know. I looked pretty hard, but I didn't see any kind of like mannequins looking like Joe Exotic in the background.
two very different sides of the coin.
But it showed you, she was saying about how she had like loads of checks coming in and stuff. It's because the thing that Big Cat Rescue, the sanctuary place, it's like an option, you know, like when you fundraise on your birthday on Facebook and stuff. So like, oh, I'm trying to raise money for British Heart Foundation, and then you put up like a donation link to raise money on your birthday.
Yeah.
That's where the money was coming from on her Facebook. It was basically like donation things, like so it might be, I'm trying to raise £100 for Big Cat Sanctuary today, or it might just be like little fundraisers. But like one of them was like 10 grand. Which was crazy. And she said that she was getting stuff each week, which was like thousands upon thousands of pounds.
Yeah.
Going on. And so we found out that Carol runs her sanctuary is a non-profit. Because we was unclear about this in the last episode. We didn't know if she was making all this kind of...
Well, you just think, don't you? Like, how could you run such a place? Like, when you realize, when you come to understand, like, just the feeding of these animals, like, it's no easy feat in terms of cash. So you just initially straight away think, well, how does that work? Like, surely that would just fall to pieces, like, once money runs out.
Yeah.
Because, you know, tigers need to eat.
Yeah, and it's like, what, is it, like, tens of thousands a year just to feed like one, essentially, yeah. Isn't it? Just
I mean that was my thought as well, that, you know, there must be some kind of charity aspect to it. And considering she has this many followers and fans, you know, people are obviously pretty open with their wallets.
Yeah, and yeah, when it comes to animals and pets and stuff, those are always going to be like popular charities, aren't they? Because people love, universally love animals. It's kind of, it would be hard to find someone who doesn't like a particular animal.
Yeah.
Just general, any animal, really. Mm-hmm. So Doc is complaining crazy about like how Carol rode the first wave of social media and how much she's making off her social media in general. And she must make a killing. Like, she makes a killing on YouTube for sure. And we see that beautiful Wild and Free music video that that woman singing, which is cringe as hell.
Yep.
It's just kind of. I need to check out these videos, like, just in general. I haven't done that yet. It's just because I don't want to find out anything. I don't find out any spoilers just yet.
Yeah,
that's, I'm trying to stay away. But Doc's complaining that Carol's place, he was like, how does she get all this like money when it's only like 12 cats? And it's like, people think that they're going to the world's biggest animal sanctuary. And even Joe references and says like, she only has like 12 tigers or lions in this whole park.
Yeah.
And the website and their place, the it claims that there's like over 100 of these cats. Like, and he ends up hiring a helicopter to go over it.
A bit of recon.
And was it John? So John's, Joe's husband was saying that he had some dark thoughts about it whilst flying over. He wanted, he had thoughts about getting grenades and throwing them down. It's
no, I think he said that Joe, yeah, Joe was actually saying this, didn't he?
No, he had thoughts about it. He didn't.
Oh, what, John had thoughts about it, or Joe had?
Joe had thoughts. Oh, so right, Joe was okay. In the helicopter and he had like thoughts about getting grenades and throwing them down.
Yeah, yeah, he obviously expressed these thoughts. That's what I'm saying. Like, they weren't in Joe's head. They, like, he must have expressed them.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't know, it's just, it's crazy. Like, you think for someone to hate someone so much that they want to essentially blow up the whole park and the animals and...
Yeah, of course. But again, you kind of, you need to take that with a pinch of salt as well.
Yeah.
Because, like, that doesn't necessarily mean that Joe would do that. I don't think you have to take that with a pinch of salt.
Yeah, I suppose it's the fact that John said that as well. So it's kind of like, it's not something that Joe would probably say to the camera, like, oh, I had thoughts about doing this.
No, exactly. But... it's kind of maybe a personal little joke, maybe. Yeah. Not the best of jokes, you know. Pretty lowbrow kind of joke, but
yeah,
you know, it's between lovers.
Yeah, it's probably in a time of like anger and frustration.
Yeah, overall. Exactly. I think you do have to take that with a pinch of salt before you kind of like brand the man, you know, a murderer of people and animals with with grenades, like.
Yeah,
and we know obviously previously that Joe perhaps doesn't necessarily think about what he's putting out there. Like I said before, like what you see is what you get with Joe, and you know, maybe he doesn't necessarily think of the consequences of saying these things, whether he means it or not, deep down.
Yeah, I did feel like he. I feel like he just hasn't got much of a filter anymore.
Yeah.
In that sense, like he's kind of just spouting his own feelings. I think he's probably just blindsided by hate for
Carol Baskin. It's pure anger. He's seeing red, isn't he? He's you know, it feels like the man's at his wit's end.
And then we go back to Joe's zoo again, and we find out from Eric Cowie. Or Cowie, I think it is. How he feeds, how they've been feeding the animals, the tigers and all that, at the zoo, and it's crazy. Like it's just so basically, Joe and team send this like big truck around to the Walmarts in the area, and they just get all the old expired meat, bung it on the truck. And come back, and then they just kind of put it into a massive thing and like feed all the animals that way.
Yeah, like they basically say that this Walmart van is full of meat that has been, or Joe explains that this meat is stuff that has been taken off the shelves, brought up to the cash register in Walmart, and then the I guess the customer decided, oh no, I don't want that now. And at this point, the meat can't be returned back to the refrigerator, I guess, because it's perhaps been left out so long that I guess re-refrigerating it after it's maybe warmed up is probably not ideal for human consumption. At least for a big business like Walmart, maybe it's you know, a protected thing for customers. So they get this kind of big van. But is that donated to the park?
Yeah, as far as I can tell. I mean, that's what I got from the gist of it, because I can't imagine them going to like a massive bin behind.
I wouldn't put it past them, man. That's the trouble. I would not put it past them.
There's too much of it. There's too much of it. It makes sense for a big company to donate all their like foods to zoos.
Yeah, and it's better that it goes to use than rather just waste and just goes to nothing. Which I suppose is a good thing.
But he was like, yeah, so Eric, one of the head keeper of the place, the guy who looks kind of like a surfer, he's wearing like
I really like this guy. He comes off really likable, like kind of laid back. It comes across that he really, really loves what he does. Again, I don't know too much about his past, but it feels like he's been saved, or he feels like he's been saved. And doesn't he mention about being an alcoholic at one point, and the fact that this saved him from that? Like he doesn't need to drink because he has to focus on the Tigers. I'm sure it mentions that.
I thought it was another one of his team. I thought it was that because he.
I think it was him.
Was it him?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. But let me just quickly back to an earlier part of the documentary where they explain where everyone's kind of second guessing about Bhagavan's wives, and some of them saying, "Oh, he's got 4 wives. He's got 9 wives. He's got 3 girlfriends." And then they ask him, and he says, "I don't give a fuck." And I'm just like, "Yes, like I like this guy."
It was a good answer because he's just like, I just think of a shit, honestly. And he basically said how he got this job was he applied for it on like Craigslist, or Craigslist as they call it over there. And he just like kind of walks in, he's like, yeah, now I'm gonna like look after tigers. Like, it's insane, it's just insane that you're just like, there's no training required. It's like kind of bam, just like, I'm just gonna look after tigers.
Yeah,
it's fine. And yeah, we see that the staff obviously go through all the meat and they're like, yep, I'm going to have first dibs on this, and then whatever's left over, just give it to the animals and stuff.
Yeah, So like obviously, like, because, you know, they're not earning big money at all. Like what you would imagine you would earn in a type of job like that is completely, well, yeah, it's kind of, it's a massive eye opener that they're only earning, what, $150. So that probably doesn't go all that far in terms of eating, and, you know, just being able to live. So yeah, they're having to like kind of scrimp from this van, like, oh yeah, here's a steak, I'll have that. Yeah, it's out of date, doesn't matter. So yeah, kind of speaks more to their situation in life.
Yeah, but then you think about, obviously, because I don't know about you, but like used by dates don't really mean that much. I mean, it's like it's only something that the supplier has to put something on there, just say they can't guarantee the freshness after this date.
So a best before date literally means that it will taste better before this date, but it's not going to harm you. Whereas obviously there are some foods that, you know, if you ate them past a certain time,
you'll be careful.
Yeah, definitely. And I don't know if that truck is refrigerated either.
No,
how long's that meat been in that truck for?
That's it. It must be boiling.
Yeah.
And the guy, was it like Eric picks up one and goes, oh, look, this is still frozen.
It's like what a find.
Yeah, what a find. So the staff, they live in like mobile homes and they look like just abandoned, don't they?
Not the greatest living arrangements, really.
Yeah, nothing works. The sink doesn't work. The washing machine doesn't work because I guess there's no water full stop.
But again, they seem happy. Like, I kind of like that. I do like that. That, you know, you and like the contrast of like Bhagavan's wives, who it appears, at least to the naked eye, in comparison, that they're living in luxury. There's a massive difference in, at least from what you can see, in the happiness levels of the two different staffs, which kind of, that speaks volumes.
Because I guess there's no kind of stipulations or whatever when it comes to like Joe. I mean, like, oh, okay, I'll pay you this. You can probably live in one of those, trailers and stuff, but there's not like kind of some creepy guy like telling them to get like a boob job or something on top.
Yeah, of course. But also, like, I, you know, there's that old saying of, you know, more money, more problems. you know, and I've seen in other documentaries of things before of like kind of people in countries where they, where, you know, where it, where they're not as fortunate as some of us maybe, but they appear happier. Like they, it's life for them. It's what they know. So they know no better. So they perhaps can't compare it to anything else. But like, I kind of love that. Like, that's kind of a big thing to me of like, sometimes less is more. Obviously not to the point of starvation. I'm not talking about, you know, people are literally starving and stuff like that, but sometimes less is more. You know, to have all this stuff can sometimes be more problematic.
Yeah, I mean, Joe's staff do seem kind of happy and content enough from what we've seen in the documentary anyway.
Yeah.
But then we see Bhagavan's, like, Barbara talks about raising cubs, raising tiger cubs there and stuff. And there's a mystery on where the tigers go.
Yeah.
Like, what happens to the older tigers? And she was talking about a particular tiger that she was, like, attached to and, like, absolutely loved. And so she doesn't know what happened to it. And Doc Antle was like, I know where they go, but, you know, it's best not to know.
Yeah, again, that speaks massively to the control aspect. Like, you don't need to know. As long as I know, then everything is okay. But again, so, yeah, it kind of leads to the thinking of there possibly is a few skeletons in the closet there.
Yeah, there's like a lot of characters you did say at this point, it kind of cuts between them saying like, oh, he euthanizes them when they're too old because they're basically seen as kind of just a waste at that point because they can't be petted. They can't be, you know, yeah, they can be shown.
I think they say like it might have even been in the first episode, possibly. I forget. But they say that once a tiger reaches a certain age, they become just a bill. Like it's just a hemorrhage of money. They're not bringing money in; they're just costing money.
Which I thought is weird because he obviously dishes out these tigers to films and stuff. So you know you probably need like a constant supply. I guess the ones that don't, you know, perform well, maybe he's euthanizing.
I suppose as well. Once a tiger or once any animal has been through that kind of process for so long, like with any kind of human being, like you get worn down by it. Like the novelty wears off, and perhaps it's that. Maybe they, because they're in this kind of unnatural situation, they kind of give up on themselves.
Yeah, I mean, I guess he does sell off some of these animals to Mario and that because Mario does say that that's who supplied him his tigers in the first place. Mm-hmm. And like, a lot of his animals come from Doc Antle. And so I'm wondering if it's Joe supplying to Doc and then Doc supplying to Mario.
Yeah.
That's what it kind of feels like overall. So maybe Doc is making some kind of profit on this overall.
More than likely.
But yeah, it's still horrible though. I feel like it's a bit of a mystery on like what he's actually doing overall.
Yeah, it's not nice to think about, is it really?
No. But then it brings us to the final part of the episode, which is the big cliffhanger.
And what a cliffhanger.
So one of Mario's keepers basically drops in the conversation that Carol's millionaire ex-husband has gone missing and has been just vanished, and that's where she got all of her money from.
Mm-hmm.
And he I guess owned the zoo originally, and then
you see in the moment that this person says this, you see that it hits this kind of light bulb switch in the documentary makers Like, because it's like, what? Hang on, I didn't know this. Like, this is an avenue to go down. So yeah, kind of really leaves you wanting more. Like, oh my God, I need to see where this goes.
Yeah, and then I guess the general gist of it is at the end, is like a lot of characters are basically saying, everybody believes that she fed him to the tigers, and the cliffhanger is, did she? But we're going to find out next episode.
I cannot wait. Like, what a way to finish that episode. Like, incredible.
Anyway, that is it for episode 2. We're going to get the next one for episode 3 out as soon as possible. So subscribe if you haven't already. Send us a message. Let us know what you think of the documentary so far. It'd be good to hear from you.
There's definitely a lot to talk about in this documentary. Like, and it really would be great to hear other opinions on the subject itself, because it's fascinating.
Yeah, if we've missed something out that you feel like we needed to talk about in one particular episode, just let us know and we'll go over it in the next 5 more episodes we've got to do on this.
Another 5 to go.
And
it makes you wonder as well, like, already in 2 episodes, so much has happened.
Yeah.
Like, and we've got 5 more. Like, I cannot wait.
Anyway, that is it. So thanks for listening. Contact us on the socials if you can. And until next time, thanks for listening.
Thank you.
Do do do.